Ko te kōkiri, ngā wero kei mui a tātou mō tēnei 26 tau pea kei mui a tātou. Huri noi tō tātou whare, tēnā koutou, kei te kai karahi kia, ngā hau I tīmata tō tātou hui I tēnei ata, tēnā koe. O tira kia koutou katoa, ngā maunga, ngā awa, ngā iwi katoa, tēnā koutou e whakakotahi nei I tēnei rā. Good morning and thank you very much for the opportunity to be here with you and to share in the prognostications of what the challenges are that lie ahead of us. Can I greet you all? I have my uncle and aunt, Sir Tarmity and Lady Reedy in the front row. Oh, and some other sirs as well, Sir Mason and Lady Jury. And I'm sure there are many more up here in the auditorium that warrant a specific mention, but I have been given a very clear time period that I must constrain myself to, and at the end of which I've agreed with Selwyn that if there are any questions that you may wish to ask, I am the horse, here is my mouth, and you can hear it directly from me. It's a common statement I make in the staff rooms of our schools around the country, and then I follow it up with, and if you're not going to ask me any questions, don't backstab me when I leave. So here I am this morning, and can I acknowledge Dr. Selwyn Kātene and Massey University for the very long and sustained interest that that university, certainly with Sir Mason and others, have established over time, the constant need to look forward and say what are our challenges and most importantly, how are we equipping ourselves to meet those. So this morning I'm going to share some thoughts with you and I look forward to the engagement of questions if that's what you... what happened there? I also gather that my husband was here yesterday and in his usual darling fashion was free and forthright with his views, so you can understand that our marriage is kept very lively by discussions of all sorts of issues. So turning to my particular comments this morning, at some point over the next decade, there will be 1 million Māori living on Earth. More than 3/4 of those are likely to be living in New Zealand, with the remainder living from Australia to Austria and from Sydney to Shanghai. The most significant challenge for Māori will be realising and harnessing our human potential, our social, cultural and economic and uniquely Māori potential of 1 million people. The population estimates indicate that there are at least 690,000 Māori in New Zealand, and the 2011 Australian census indicated there were 130,000 Māori living there. The estimated population across both countries indicates the Māori population is around 0.012% of the world's population. Size-wise, that makes it around the same as the population of Fiji, current GDP around $7 billion, or the population of Bhutan, current GDP around $6 billion, or the French nation of Reunion off the coast of Madagascar, GDP unknown, or the nation of Cyprus, current GDP around $25 billion. Economic research and population-based data estimate that the economic wealth of the Māori population is around $37 billion. That Māori life expectancy has increased to 75 years, and it needs to increase more. That the median age is 24 years. Look at all that potential. That 89% of Māori know their iwi, and just showing my East Coast bias, and that Ngāti Porou along with Kahungunu and Ngāpuhi are the three largest iwi. That for 50% of Māori, their whānau size consists of fewer than 11 people. And that 81% of Māori are satisfied with their lives as New Zealanders. This would suggest that Māori, depending on which set of indicators is used, can go into the future towards 2040 in a better position than occurred at the start of either the 19th or the 20th, or perhaps even the 21st centuries. The position of potential today will have been the result of a lot of hard work by generations of leaders, of whānau, of hapū, of iwi. The development of leadership skills for an ever-changing global and technological environment remains a challenge faced by the diverse reality of Māoridom and iwidom as much as it is by any other group of people. This is particularly the case as New Zealand is on the cusp of moving beyond the settlement of historical injustices and hopefully grievances with the Crown. Māori leadership over at least the last three decades has had to focus on arguing, settling and resolving treaty injustices. Significant progress has been made. Commentators and academics alike have begun focusing on charting a future in a post-settlement era. Treaty settlement progress as of today, 72 deeds of settlement have been signed in total. Approximately 51 settlements remain, 7 of which will initial a deed and another 7 will reach an agreement in principle with the Crown by the end of this year. This figure includes separate settlements for significant natural resources, harbours, Tongariro National Park, Taranaki Maunga. The majority of the remaining groups are in negotiations with the Crown or working towards mandate recognition. The number may change depending on the configuration of groups yet to enter negotiations. Significant recent treaty settlement milestones include the signing of the deed of settlement for Whanganui River, delivering the historical Crown apology to Tūhoe, and the passage of the Ngā Mana Whenua or Tāmaki Makaurau Collective Act. As discussed, while there remains a focus on achieving settlements, a number of iwi and a broader discourse across New Zealand is also talking about how to navigate the post-settlement environment. Not surprisingly, the Crown has been talking about this too and taking account of an additional focus on post-settlement. Over a year ago in the Ministry of Justice, the Post-Settlements Commitment Unit was established. And this unit works with other Crown agencies, with local government and with iwi to ensure that agreements reached are honoured and carried out. The government has also been strengthening relationships with an economic perspective in mind, including providing ongoing business opportunities to connect Māori entrepreneurs with other global partners. Māori are already engaging economically with vigour, with talent, with ambition, and with confidence in all sectors of the New Zealand economy. Maximising economic opportunities is especially important given the lessons learned by New Zealand in the global economic climate, where long-term strategic investors survived and short-term speculators did not. Māori have taken a permanent position in the national economy with strong cooperatives and iwi entities and have worked hard to feature in the economic turnaround in all trade and commercial fields at home and abroad. Māori collectively owned assets are but one part of the Māori and indeed New Zealand economy. The asset base of Māori self-employed and employer groups is estimated to be much larger. And of course, the asset base of working Māori in wages and salaries is considerably larger again. Working the existing Māori economy harder, smarter, and faster will help. But for longer-term sustainable development, there must remain a deliberate and planned focus for the future on building individual and personal human capital and Māori potential through education. Through sustained presence, engagement and achievement throughout the learning pathway by all Māori children and young people, we will position our people well globally and locally. Getting things right in education will provide a next generation of leadership and participation to enhance and further develop the entrepreneurial, managerial and governance capabilities of Māori. 6 years ago, New Zealanders overwhelmingly voted National into government. The National-led government immediately set about implementing our plans, and we have made steady progress to deliver more jobs and higher incomes for New Zealanders. We were also determined to focus on education, which we felt had been neglected for too long. We found quite a bit that needed attention. As one indicator alone, at the end of 2008, Māori young people leaving our secondary school system were doing so at the shameful rate of 44% with our minimum qualification. Less than half of all Māori still in the school system, not accounting for those who had actually left the school system, 44% at the end of 2008 left with NCEA 2. This still makes me emotional, as you can tell, that it was acceptable for our mainstream system to spit Māori kids out where less than half had the minimum qualification. It was slightly better for Pacifica at 51%. And in the past 5 years, I'm absolutely proud to say, while knowing that there is more to do, that in these past 5 years, with focus and attention and tenacity and relentlessness, that 44% has been lifted to 63%. In 5 short years, we've had nearly a 20% lift in Māori achievement at NCEA 2 level. Now, 63% is better than 44%, but it's nowhere near good enough. Not if we're to have the base that allows the recognition and the flourishing and the realisation of the potential of each and every young New Zealander, including young Māori. Education, when we came in, was not about how we as a nation were going to raise the achievement of our children to meet the challenges of the world they were growing up into. Why? Because our education system is still fundamentally built on 19th century industrial considerations. How do we know that? It's still from 9 to 3, Monday to Wednesday, where kids start at their batch order of 5 years old. Then they move each year along the processing line until they arrive at either their 16th birthday, or if we can engage them, they stay until they have the best qualifications possible and then move on. So one of our biggest functional challenges is that our education system is built with 19th century considerations. It's delivered by people from the 20th century to kids who are of the 21st century. We want all our kids to be leaving school with the skills they need to reach their potential in a modern economy. That means lifting up those who are being left behind while pushing those who are doing well to do even better. Education can make a twofold contribution to our country. It builds our social and cultural strength and our productivity. That's important for our economy, and it's important for Aotearoa New Zealand. We are a small country that must make up for size with smarts. We must outthink our competitors. We are never going to, and nor would we want to, out-procreate those countries with whom we trade and barter. But we can outthink, we can outsmart, we can outcreate, we can out-innovate. But all of that relies on the strength of identity, language and culture harnessed to a great education. We must be able to turn clever ideas into commercially successful products that we can sell to the world. We must attract overseas businesses to use our expertise. And we need New Zealanders who are culturally adept, fluent and intelligent in different cultural contexts, and ideally linguistically capable as we seek to trade and service economies and societies with whom we have shared and growing interests. But it is equally important for us as New Zealanders. We must leverage our bicultural heritage and increasingly multicultural richness. Education is absolutely vital to achieving this. We need our system to equip all young Māori, all New Zealanders, to be successful participants in and leaders of a 21st century economy.
Knowledge, qualifications and skills are a key that opens the door to better jobs, better incomes and better life opportunities. This leads to improved economic and social outcomes for New Zealanders and in turn a more prosperous New Zealand. We are committed to raising educational achievement for 5 out of 5 kids. Not 1 out of 5, not 2 out of 5, not 3 out of 5, but 5 out of 5. Successful young New Zealanders grow the potential of our country. Disengaged, dislocated, disappointed young people don't. We do not have another generation to waste. This is an urgent call to action. It has been quite apparent for some time, certainly before I became Minister of Education, but also before National led this government, that New Zealand's education system, while very much world-class and in the front rank of education systems globally, has been slowly falling behind in some of the key metrics by which education systems are judged at a global level. Countries with which we traditionally compare ourselves have, to varying degrees, suffered similar fates: Australia, the United States, the United Kingdom, Finland. And the emerging Asian dynamos in an educational sense, China and her territories, Singapore, Vietnam, Korea, South, have made great strides ahead in these same surveys. We, our national-led government, is committed to holding ourselves transparent and accountable for the targets that we've set in terms of education at ECE, primary schooling, secondary and the secondary-tertiary interface. Lifting the achievement of these young people is the driving force behind our better public service targets. They're ambitious targets, but our young people and our nation deserve no less. We aim in 2017 to have 90% of all new entrants having participated in quality early childhood education. 98%. We're at 95.9% nationally, but one of the things I have made sure that we have instituted is we also measure, monitor and report on ethnic cohort populations. Because that way we do not mask for ourselves how well or not our young people are doing. So at early childhood, Māori are now up at 91%. We've got 7% growth to get to the target in Māori early childhood education participation. We've established a mantra in the Ministry of Education. It's go from numbers to names to needs. So I say to schools and early childhood centres when I'm in them every week of the year, that it's my job to know the numbers and it's their job to know the names and the needs. And so I know the numbers, 1,740 under fives each year in the next year have to be enrolled in some kind of early learning if we are to hit that 98% target. 1,740. These will be your mokopuna. If they're not in an early childhood centre, and it can be parent-led and home-based, or teacher-led and centre-based, then you need to take action. This is personal. It's not just a system issue. Who are these kids? Where are they? How do we help them? And it starts with early childhood education. At primary school, we've set a bridging target of 85% of all our primary school age kids being at or above national standards in English or Te Reo Māori. I was just having a discussion outside with a young woman who's training to be a speech and language therapist, and it seems that we still have this misapprehension in our country that you can only be literate in English, which will be a surprise, of course, to the French. But the idea is that actually we need to be able to have tools, well, and to, you know, most of the rest of the world. And then at 18-year-olds, we have a target of 85% of 18-year-olds in 2017 having the minimum NCEA 2 qualification, 85%. We're at 63%, as I've already indicated, for Māori. So because you're very numerate, you know that's 22% that we have to get over the next 4 years, which is 5.5% every year. That is a piki mahi. It really is. And these kids are your sons and daughters, your grandsons and granddaughters, your nieces and nephews, your grandnieces and nephews. They are our whānau. It is that personal. I spoke to the iwi leaders group, well, I've spoken to them a few times, but the last time was to say, these are your whakapapa uri. Yes, we in government, me as minister, I will knock myself out to do the very best I can. And actually, however, that needs to be reciprocated by the obligation, not the choice, the obligation of making sure our young people are in at school at the age they should be. Okay? Presence and engagement actually makes up something like 15% of the potential to be successful. It's a no-brainer. If you're not in a learning environment, the potential of being successful is limited. So just getting our kids to school with breakfast and a Marmite sandwich, which doesn't require rocket science knowledge of data, will itself effect enormous change for our young people. So what I said was, stop coming to Wellington. We don't need any more strategies or plans. We need minivans going round, picking up our kids, delivering them to the school, and then picking them up in the afternoon and taking them to a homework centre. It's that simple. It's that simple. We got the school system. I know what the problems are. Well, and if I don't, I'm always being told. So we got that part of it. We need the response from the community. And then 55% of 25 to 34-year-olds having gained at least level 4 qualification on the qualifications framework. The results are meaningful, and you will have to take away with you at the end of today the infographic that provides all of the most recent data of Māori educational participation and achievement from 0 to 18 years in English medium and Māori medium. We have built a framework called PAI, Public Achievement Information. The more we know about achievement information, the more we can be engaged in this common obligation of ours to raise learning and achievement amongst our young people. So we've made some progress, but there is a worryingly persistent equity gap, which means we need to do more quickly. Building on the evidence of what works for Māori students and what matters to them as culturally vibrant, enthused and aspirational young people is the key to getting sustainable system shift and lift. I would encourage you, as I just have done, in fact I'm like begging you to all get involved in how the young people in your community, in your whānau, are getting the best education possible. We need to do more. Successive governments have wrestled with the challenge of students who leave school but lack the forward momentum to propel them into tertiary study. And by tertiary study, I don't just mean academic university study. Yes, that is absolutely a pathway that we want to continue to have open. But actually, as a rule of thumb, traditionally, secondary schools have spent about 70% of their resources on about 30% of their kids, the ones going to university. And we put a lot of effort in our national-led government to create pathways, which, to take their proper nomenclature, which are about the parity of esteem. In other words, the right pathway for the young person is the right pathway for that young person. Whether it's a trade apprenticeship, whether it's a technical qualification, whatever is right for that young person. That was nifty. Was that somebody telling me to finish? Because this thing just opened and poked me in the leg. Well, that sounds a bit ribald, but I mean, sorry. It was a disc, to be clear. Okay. Oh, sorry. Okay, right. Okay, exciting times at Massey. Right, okay, so while many students have already planned their pathway before they leave year 13, some give up on education at secondary school and do not see a pathway ahead for themselves. Our government has worked hard to bridge that gap with a range of youth guarantee initiatives that provide 16 and 17-year-olds the opportunity to make different choices. But as with everything in education, this is not an either-or, it is an and-and. My particular mission is to ensure that first-chance education is successful. But where that isn't, or where we're still catching up, providing opportunities for young people is as important, and we will continue to do that. What the evidence tells us is that too many of the kids that our system has been careless with are Māori and Pacific students, those who come from poorer homes, those who have special education needs, or a permutation of all four. We can and must do better for them. For too long, too many of these young people have left school without the qualifications, the skills, or the belief they need to succeed. For too long, they have been, quote, those kids, said with the voice of low expectation and dismissed with the fatalism of, quote, we know which ones. Well, since we do, we must not simply label, we must act. We cannot be careless about their futures. They are part of ours. We also made some strong investments in Māori medium, supporting the drive for more kaiako and for tautoko for kaiako in kura for longer. Dr. Sharples, as the Associate Minister of Education, has worked long and hard on these areas, and we have thought very hard about how we create a sustainable pipeline. Something like only 20% of kōhanga kids go to a kura. That's one in five who participate in kōhanga actually go on to a kura. It's a no-brainer. Mehe mea koetahi o koutou e mahi ana I roto I te ngā kura kaupapa, ngā kōhanga, ā te whakaaro, me hono koutou kia koutou anō. Ne? Mehe mea ka whakatipu ngā tamariki mokopuna nei ki roto I te ia o te kōhanga reo, me hono te kura kaupapa, me hono te whare kura ki te kura kaupapa, me hono te whare wānanga ki te whare kura. Kia kitea e ngā mātua me te hāpuri, me he mea ka hau atu aku mokopunu tamariki ki roto I tēnei momo kura, ka taia e rātou te hīkoi mo te roanga o tōna haerenga mātauranga I runga I tērā huarahi. Ne? It's not taking rocket science that's what we need to be doing. So, he inoi kia koutou, a kei konei ahau te tautoko me ngā rawa, me te pūtea, kia taia e tātou te hanga tērā huarahi pakari. So these aren't empty words. We have already made resource available and will continue to do so. More broadly, the government has recognised the important role parents, whānau, community play. And that's why we've been strengthening governance in schools. You, in this system, can run your school with complete state funding. To do that, stand for election for your local board. Ngā wari noiho, ia toru tau me hiki te ringa, stand for your local school board. You run those schools. They are multi-million dollar enterprises. Their core business is raising learning and achievement. You can be in charge of that. Whew. Okay. These two commitments are intrinsically linked. Don't worry, I'm coming to the end. I'm talking about the role of parents in demanding responsive, effective education and the role of boards of trustees as governors in representing their community's interests. It is ultimately through a strong whānau voice and clear understanding of how good education practice can lift student achievement that schools will transform. Along with parents, it's really important that we increase community expectations. There are something like, according to the meta-analyses, given that I'm talking to a significantly academic community, that according to the 161 factors that have an effect on raising learning and achievement, the top four, two in school and two out of school, are the quality of teaching, practice. I have never, quote, said the quality of teachers, the quality of teaching practice, and the second is the quality of leadership. Those are the two in school factors that have the most effect for the same amount of money. Let me be clear, class size does have an effect, but it's like 131st. It does have an effect, but it doesn't have the same effect as these potent two here. And the two out of school are the strength of parental and whānau engagement with their children's learning and the expectations held of and for the kids by their community. Those are free. You can do those with no cost. Be involved in our children's education, hold high expectations for them. These two, you're paying as taxpayers. Vote Education is the highest it's ever been at $10.1 billion. Thank you. Right. All of you... Yep. Okay. I was a youth representative at the Huitomata 30 years ago. I had the privilege of speaking alongside Professor Whatarangi Winiata and Bruce Stewart in closing the Huitomata in 1984. In 2004... I had the honour of being the Deputy Secretary of Policy in Te Puni Kōkiri that helped co-host and facilitate that Huitomata milestone. And here I am, milestoning my career, the Minister of Education, at this Huitomata reflection and focus forward. I have been extremely fortunate throughout my career, and by the way, I'm just a story like all of you with our chapters still unfolding. I hope to have yet another strong chapter unfolding very shortly. I have been extremely fortunate throughout my career to have had access to some of our great leaders, and that has enabled me to make what I consider to be a positive contribution to New Zealand, and there is more yet to be done. Over the next session, you will be considering ideas about how you can get the balance right between current and future needs. And here's a challenge for the 2040 Huitomata reflection and focus forward. Let's make sure that the preponderance of speakers then are successful business leaders, employment creators, resource developers, wealth generators. The preponderance of us speaking at these conferences are still government. And the government, while important in our lives, is not our relations. Well, I am related to some of you here, but our closest relations are not ministers of the Crown or public servants. Minimising the role of government in our lives, maximising our lives in the middle of our whānau, is what true potential is about. So let's look to 2040 and ensure that over the interceding years, we develop success in those kinds of ways, where government is a bit player, doing the job it should be doing, creating the conditions for success, and liberating and facilitating and supporting the outbreak of creativity and innovation amongst us all. I urge you to consider what steps you can make to invest in the potential of today's young, middle-aged, old and ageing people to be today, tomorrow's future leaders. And I'm going to finish. As I said in my maiden speech to Parliament in 2008, we must all at once be conscious of the weight of history and expectation that presses and at the lightness of possibilities that beckon. Like many of you, I am familiar with this dichotomy. I have grown up in a culture that walks through the present with the constant companions of the past and the future. This practice prepares us particularly well, I think, as we weigh actions of today against those of the past and the implications for the future. Tēnā koutou katoa.